in NAG because he's visited with us on prior occasions. We've asked him again to address privacy issues since he's the chair of the Privacy Caucus in Congress. He's been an outspoken and, I think, extraordinary advocate for the perspectives of those of us who worry about privacy protections in this modern economic environment. So we're honored to have you join us and look forward again to an update. Senator, please.
Thank you again. Thank you very much for inviting me. My colleague from Washington State will follow me, and I just mentioned a minute ago, I said to her, I said, if I leave the reservation, she'll bring us back home, I'm sure, in many ways. I'm pleased to share some of my thoughts on the important issue of privacy that you're involved in and where I see the debate going in the future. I think that the best way to begin today is by addressing a couple of key questions. First, why should we seek to protect personal privacy? Second, what and when do we protect? And third, how do we protect privacy? I believe that the answer to this first question is rather straightforward. By protecting personal privacy, we can help protect people from harm. These harms include the tangible, such as stalking, physical violence, or identity theft, as well as the intangible, such as embarrassment, or even just the sense of loss of personal security. At this this last point is of particular interest to me. There are those in the privacy debate who would like to minimize the concern behind the loss of privacy to one of harassing telemarketing calls or getting too many catalogs in the mail. It goes beyond this, I believe, because it is not so much that you may find it rude or poor manners to receive a marketing call at dinner time offering you various investment products. It is, I believe, that they are calling you because they know that you've been carrying high balances in your checking account for the past few months. It's not the annoyance factor that upsets people, I believe, so much. It is the feeling of insecurity. That strangers, people that you do not have a business relationship with, that you do not even know, have access to this important information about you, disturbs all of us. So when we talk about privacy, I think we're also talking about security in a sense. In the end, the motivation behind protecting privacy is the fact that when our privacy is secure, we both feel safer, or in fact safer. Our concerns about privacy in the past largely involved government intrusion. Our patchwork of privacy laws passed in the early 70s, such as the Privacy Act of 74, the Right to Financial Privacy Act, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, all dealt with government. In large part, this can be attributed to the fact that the government had the unparalleled ability to collect, store, and use personal identifiable information. Over time, however, the private sector has joined the federal government in acquiring the power and interest in collecting, cataloging, and sharing personal information. Technology made it possible and cost-effective to gather, store, and use massive amounts of information. Indeed, the technology economy that has developed maintains a voracious appetite for information. This considerable demand has led to a situation where businesses go to great lengths to try to find out the most minute details of consumers and their lifestyles. Medical, credit card, banking, phone records covering just about every activity in our lives are being gathered, stored, shared, and yes, sold. Big business thus has joined Big Brother as consumers of our most sensitive personal information. And while each may present a separate set of concerns, the fact is both business and government activities pose legitimate and serious threats to our personal privacy. Answering the question about why we should protect privacy only opens the door to more questions. The next logical question involves determining what and when we're going to protect privacy. I think the best and most realistic way to approach this issue is to recognize that not all information disclosure presents the same threat or harm. For example, most of us would be highly concerned about public disclosure of our financial records and almost entirely unconcerned over the fact that our name and address appear on a mailing list. Common sense leads us to recognize that there are huge differences in the privacy value of different kinds of information. And I think that this distinction is a good indicator of where governmental action is targeted in limiting the intrusions on personal privacy, and that is to those disclosures that present the most danger or could cause the most harm to individuals. Personally, I believe that there are three general areas that these issues fall into. I informally classify them as issues of nature, capacity, and power. Nature. For example, what is the nature of the information sought to be shared or protected? The more sensitive or inherently personal the information, the greater the need to protect, like medical records, genetic and financial information. Capacity. What is the capacity of the individual to protect himself or herself? For example, we recognize that children need greater protection, either by empowering parents or by passing laws to sanction certain threatening activities or behaviors. And power. Who has the power to use the information in a way that causes harm or adverse consequences for the individual? Traditionally, historically, as a republic, our biggest concern is with the power of government and its unique ability to restrict our individual rights and civil liberties. And that is why issues of intrusions into privacy by the government garners significant consensus and alarm. We briefly touched on the subject of why we protect privacy, and I've offered some suggestions as to what we should seek to protect. Now I would like for a few minutes to address the issue of what means should be utilized to protect privacy. First, Congress could enact federal legislation. Second, states could enact locally applicable measures. Third, private entities could choose to self-regulate. Lastly, market forces could independently drive changes and provide technological adaptations to protect privacy. Let us consider each of these separately. I think the basis for any direct federal action will focus on those cases where the type of information involved presents the greatest potential for harm, where individuals lack the means to protect themselves, where government action threatens liberty, and where the markets fail to build in protections for consumers. These particular areas, I believe, have the greatest potential to garner the kind of consensus that will be needed to pass any legislation in Congress. Privacy protection legislation could also be enacted on the state level. The bottom line issue here, however, will be the extent, if any, that the federal government attempts to preempt state law. I support preserving a role for the states. I also think that any federal proposals to preempt the states will only pass if an extremely high level of federal privacy protection is provided, and that trade-off is a big one. Self-regulation is an idea that has been widely discussed in the context of the Internet. The key to any self-regulatory scheme is the level of confidence the public has in the system. The level of confidence will be determined by the extent by which those that promise to abide by self-governance actually do so in practice. In my estimation, I think the public is still very leery of companies that promise to protect privacy through internal measures. The World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, has recently developed the Platform for Privacy Preferences Project, or P3P, to facilitate the adoption of an industry standard that will allow users of the Internet to gain more control over the use of their personal information. While this might be encouraging, I think it will be interesting to see how well the web's P3P initiative works in practice. Market-driven solutions are occurring and will continue to occur in those areas where the public has the greatest awareness of the issues, the largest variety of choices, and the strongest incentives and power to vote with their feet when their interests are not being served. That said, and with an acknowledgement that it is tough to predict the future, I think consensus is developing around adopting measures to limit the disclosure of the kinds of information that pose the highest threats to individual privacy. Now let me turn to discuss some of those areas where I think privacy protection efforts will be successful. I believe a core area of concern where the consensus that greater protections are needed is the unauthorized disclosure of medical records and genetic information. Recently, President Bush decided to move forward with the medical privacy rules drafted by the Clinton administration. I believe the decision to move forward is important for a couple of reasons. First, I believe it reflects an understanding of how much concern there is about the potential misuse and abuse of medical records information. And the same goes for genetic information, if not more. The potential for harm and discrimination based on genetic information is great, and I think still largely unknown, partly because technology continues to take us beyond what was once unimaginable. In the end, this is an area where the people are not going to feel comfortable referring to industry or market solutions to provide privacy protection. Concern will grow, and I believe the government will step in. Second, many commentators believe that the president's move is a sign that he plans to follow through on his earlier public comments supporting greater privacy protections. I hope so. Another area where I think we will see enactment of federal legislation will involve restricting the dissemination and disclosure of Social Security numbers. Social Security numbers were never intended to become the end-all, be-all personal identifier that they have become. As their use in this regard has proliferated, the interest in obtaining them for both legitimate and nefarious purposes has grown as well. The tragic murder of Amy Boyer and the serious and growing problem of identity theft are providing the headlines that fuel the movement to provide protection of Social Security numbers. From Capitol Hill, we've already seen a great deal of bipartisan legislation intended to limit the misuse of Social Security numbers. I think that we're growing closer to passing a bill with each Congress, particularly in light of the President's apparent support for making it a criminal offense to sell Social Security numbers. On a related front, I believe we will pass legislation that provides greater security for financial information. A couple of years ago, Congress passed legislation you're familiar with that updated the laws that dealt with banking and financial services. While so-called consumer privacy provisions were included in this bill, I most certainly do not believe these provisions actually did much to protect the financial privacy of most Americans. I find it ironic that we have greater protection of what videos we rent than we do our financial information. But I believe the privacy provisions of Graham Leach Bliley are floor rather than a ceiling for a couple of reasons. First, I believe consumers will demand it. I continue to be confused by the financial service industry's opposition to financial privacy legislation because their entire business is built on trust. And yet it is that very trust that has been and will continue to be undermined by their indiscriminate sale and trade in their customers' financial information. Consumers don't have the same relationships that they used to with their banks because the business and the markets have changed. They're global. And with the passage of Graham Leach Bliley, this relationship will only continue to become more distant with the continued growth of large multinational holding companies. Second, that global business subjects them to higher data protection standards in other countries. This becomes costly and problematic. Unless the European Union, which provides greater protections for their citizens than we have, are willing to lower their standards, which I don't see, I believe the industry will have to move beyond Graham Leach Bliley. Third, because of the law's lack of preemption, the industry itself is starting to push for a federal standard that by its nature would have to go beyond Graham Leach Bliley. In the end, the nominal cost of providing greater consumer protections will be far outweighed by the efficiency, certainty, and integrity gained in the marketplace. I intend to continue my efforts to push for greater protections in this area. I've introduced two pieces of legislation, one requiring advance consent prior to sharing or selling behavioral profile information on consumers, and the second that would restrict the sharing and selling of Social Security numbers without consent. I'm currently working with Senator Graham, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, to hold a hearing on the Social Security number issue in the near future. Perhaps we could get some of you to testify there in the Senate. I also believe that Congress is willing to act in situations where the government overreaches and threatens individual privacy. For example, recent government efforts such as the Know Your Customer rules that would have required financial service firms to collect massive amounts of data about their customers and make that data available to the government were widely criticized and quickly defeated. I personally worked several years ago to expand the Driver's License Privacy Protection Act to limit the ability of state governments to sell certain information they compel people to provide on their driver's license applications. The historical record is filled with instances where Congress acted to scale back the activities of the federal and state governments that could affect the privacy of the American people. I believe that long tradition will continue. I'm a firm believer in free markets and the new technology economy. We live in the most prosperous society on earth because of them. However, as we move forward and technology plays an ever greater role in our lives, it's essential that technology serve us rather than us serving it. One of the best ways to achieve this is to establish a framework that preserves the ability of individuals to make their own choices. Last year, I became a founding member of the Congressional Privacy Caucus, a bipartisan, bicameral organization dedicated to protecting individual privacy. The caucus was formed around four key principles, which I believe are key to establishing this framework. These principles are, one, notice. Individuals must be informed in a clear and conspicuous manner when private companies or governmental agencies plan to collect, use, and or disclose personal information. Two, access and correction. A person must have access to personally identifiable information held by a private company or government agency to be able to make sure that it is accurate, timely, and complete, and they must have the ability to correct erroneous information. Three, consent. I believe this is an easy one. A private company or individual must receive prior affirmative consent before using or disclosing personal information. Preemptions last. This provision is especially important for our discussion today. You all have a key role in protecting people's privacy. The caucus members fully understand this. We want to ensure that individuals benefit from the strongest privacy protections available. Therefore, we will work to ensure that federal privacy protections do not preempt state laws or other regulations that provide stronger privacy protections. In the end, I believe we're headed in the direction where one day the American people, not the government, financial service corporations, or internet service providers, will have the power to decide for themselves when and how their personal information is used in the new information economy. I believe this because the marketplace depends on consumer confidence, and that confidence can only be sustained through greater privacy and security protections in an information society. Thank you for letting me address you here today. hope you have a good session here. You're going to have a great speaker in just a minute, but I've got to beat her to Washington. She'll be coming right behind me for other reasons. But thank you again for letting me be with you.
Thank you. Senator Shelby, Alabama, thank you very, very much.
You'll note that for dessert, we didn't distribute cookies. Many of us have been through these privacy policy debates, and I was pleased the senator started with notice. I don't know if that was an intentional taxonomy, but I'm increasingly persuaded that that's the heart of the consumer protection that we desire to provide. Well, we have another United States Senator who's with us, and one that has experience both as a lawmaker, but also from inside the business, and is a techie and understands these matters from sort of personal experience, as well as, of course, having been in Congress in the House, and now from Washington State, elected last year to the U.S. Senate. We're pleased to have you join us, an honor to have you participate in our deliberations, Senator Maria Cantrell. Senator.
Thanks, Bill, for that introduction, and Senator Shelby, if you're still out in the hall, thank you for your work in chairing the Privacy Caucus and your kind actions in Washington. He was one of the first people I met after getting sworn in, and very gracious in welcoming new members, and look forward to working with him on privacy. I don't know if I'm really a techie. You can definitely say that I won the election in a recount effort that required most of America to look on a website every day to find out what was happening. Which brought me to Washington with people asking me questions about where is Skamania County anyway, and what do I do now that I'm so used to going to a website every day? Do you have any referrals you want to give me? But I'm here today to obviously talk about one of the most significant public policy issues that have emerged, personal privacy and how we protect that in the digital age. Just from a frame of reference and perspective, it was an issue during the Senate race that I ran, and from the public perspective in polling during that time period, I haven't seen polls recently, was consistently in the top three issues that the public said that they were most concerned about. It could have been that we in Washington State were discussing that as a possible legislative initiative or before the state legislature had increased that. But my sense is, in talking to other pollsters throughout the country, that this issue remains very high on the public's agenda issue, policy issues that they want dealt with. Why I bring that up is because policymakers in Washington usually respond very much to those kinds of data points and try to take action. As Senator Shelby said, we'll be discussing much of that in this current session of Congress. The issue of privacy protection obviously is a very multifaceted issue. I first became involved with it when I was in the 103rd Congress at a time when the past administration was proposing the Clipper chip. Some of you may remember that debate of putting a chip in computers to give the government access in cases of law enforcement violations. At the time, I thought that was not a good idea, and potentially the same as, instead of saying Intel inside on your computer, it'd be saying U.S. government inside, and I didn't think that was a very good marketing tool. So fought that and got involved in the issue of protecting personal privacy from the perspective of the federal government. And I bring that up because there are significant problems with how government is handling personal data that it collects and manages, and some of you are probably aware that September last year, the GAO report said that 23 of the 70 federal agencies that it studied shared personal information, and at least four agencies shared information with non-government parties, all of this without notice to individuals. The GAO is now reporting that as government agencies share personal information, new personal information results. And obviously, these linking and collecting of data may simply be an efficiency issue, but for GAO, this information sharing has raised a lot of questions about our 1974 Privacy Act and the 1988 Computer Matching and Privacy Protection Act and how well they're being enforced. So even in a matter as simple as the use of cookies, where the executive branch had made an order saying don't use cookies, the Inspector General's report recently came back saying that 60 federal agencies continue to use cookies in spite of that action. So why am I mentioning all this? Well, because obviously these issues as they relate to the federal government about protecting privacy are critically important, and the issues surrounding carnivore I think are probably at the height of that issue. Even if carnivore turns out to be managed within the legal bounds of the Constitution, the questions being asked are critical. And I believe that this is an area where we will see new laws enacted to better ensure individuals' Fourth Amendment rights against improper search and seizure. Senator Leahy, who I serve on, who's on the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, has brought this issue up in the past, and I believe we'll bring it up again in this upcoming session. So we need to assure the proper constraints against government intrusion, whether it's into our personal email or other data sources. And one of your colleagues here at the center, Larry Lessig, proposed what was really, I think, considered what you might say a property right in privacy. And you may not agree that a property right should exist, but in the digital age, I think the time has come to clarify what the aspects of privacy should be that are legally protected. And I believe that that property right framework gives us some understanding. People need to have a clear standard upon which to base their expectations. And while there are many important policy considerations that could be considered today, and I'm sure that these are things that you're talking about, and Senator Shelby mentioned some of those, whether one privacy law fits all, or whether you could have different standards for financial banking, online business, or whether the internet space should be treated differently than the real world space, or how to create a policy framework that is truly global, because that is, for the online world, exactly how we're operating. Today, I'm going to try to focus just on the online information that consumers are asked to provide when they access a website or complete a transaction and give information that is collected in an aggregate way to make consumer profiles. I'll leave some of those other challenging questions for you throughout your sessions here. Consumers certainly have differing expectations regarding information that they provide to retailers as compared to medical or financial service providers. And while one may not be too concerned about providing personal information to one business, when that same individual becomes aware that this information is being aggregated with that of other businesses and that a consumer profile is being compiled by a third business, individuals are rightly concerned. And I think that is exactly what the polling information most showed, that it is the thought of your financial resume or health resume being compiled and being available online. I had that interesting experience during the campaign where somebody printed out a report on me that came back with my Social Security number, everybody that I was related to Social Security, and my former boss's Social Security number. How they got that in 24 hours is because it was already compiled. Somebody had already done that homework to know all of those connections and relations with me. The online industry has made some efforts to address consumer concerns with sealed programs and the new network advertising initiative, which allows consumers to opt out of accepting cookies. These have been two approaches. But I believe in many cases these efforts have been not widely adopted or fully implemented or come close to dealing with what I think is a fundamental problem here, the speed and proliferation of online information. When I think about self-regulation, it makes sense in a number of realms of other businesses. For instance, the entertainment industry is charged with self-policing their ratings for movies and games. And when I think about that process, the product and the time frame for delivery allow much more certainty in the delivery of what consumers are expecting. So in practice, the system is relatively simple. But when you think about the online world where information is moving so fast, new products are developed and shipped every 6 or 7 months, I think it becomes a much harder challenge. In contrast, the personal privacy at some level is a constitutional right. Some of you may disagree with me on this point, but I think that the public certainly has an expectation that their privacy is going to be protected. And absent adequate controls, actual and substantial harm can come to individuals and to the public at large. The worst case of this has already been mentioned in the sense of identity theft. The victims find themselves and their lives turned upside down, and they struggle at getting help to apprehend the perpetrators and straightening out their personal finances. It is definitely not one of these crimes where you call 911 and get immediate assistance. Some have argued that technology will be the solution, and I believe that technology will be part of the solution. Technology will be the means by which consumers will be able to control their personal data flow. But technology will be the mechanism that will impose compliance with rules that are law. And P3P is a great example, and you'll hear more about this later on. That's going to give consumers great control and flexibility in how they do that. Microsoft's Hailstorm product, I'm sure you're going to hear about, provides a wide range of controls for consumers. There's another Seattle-based organization, XNS.org, has designed a similar technology standard that's based on P3P. And so consumers are going to have lots of choices. The system can facilitate compliance with laws, permissions, or business management imposed controls, but the technology is only the means of execution. Software does only what the programmers design it to do. And in this regard, Lessig had a point. In my view, the code is an integral part of implementation of the law, but technology is not the only solution. In the last Congress, over 30 bills were introduced, and obviously Senator Shelby gave us some updates on that privacy legislation. I'd like to, as a framework, mention a couple of those that are probably the major focuses of what you all have been talking about so far today and the rest of today. Senator McCain and Kerry's bill, which was introduced, that provided that a website operator could collect personally identifiable information only if the operator provided notice and opportunity for a consumer to opt out of particular uses or disclosure to third parties. The bill provided for the state or Federal Trade Commission to be the enforcer on this. Senator Hollings, by contrast, introduced a bill that was wide-ranging, applying to online activities with special provisions for books, recorded music, videos, and satellite television services. And Senator Hollings incorporated all of the fair information practices, those things that have been talked about to some degree today, notice, choice, access, the ability to correct information, security, and enforcement. And this bill provided for the private right of action and preemption conflicting state laws. So there are several other bills in the House, but over the last 2 years we've seen this mood shift from a state focus to the federal focus, to the degree that now that it looks like state law might not be passed, those are saying, well, maybe we don't have to have a federal law either. And I think that that is not well suited. In fact, we should work for a good federal framework at the national level. I believe that framework should be a floor, if you will, that will protect consumers and provide adequate recourse where personally identifiable information is mishandled. And what should the goals of that framework be? Because I think that this is an important discussion, not just the five information practices, but what would good national policy be? First of all, transparency. The law should be a framework for transparency. Consumers should be able to understand what information is being collected from them and about them. Second, property rights. They should be able to learn what those collecting the information may do with it, and they should be able to say no if they don't want that information used in a particular way. And there should be third, predictability. The law should be clear so as to create an environment of certainty and predictability for both the consumers and online businesses. But it also must be flexible enough to adapt to technology solutions that are yet to be developed. The Washington State Legislature, with the help of Attorney General Christine Gregoire, tried to address this this tough issue in a law that would have protected Washington citizens from, quote, fraud, deception, nuisance, invasion of privacy, breach of confidentiality related to the disclosure of personal information. And they attempted in their draft to say that, quote, the dissemination of certain sensitive information causes a great risk of harm to the consumer, and that requiring consumer authorization to disseminate such information should be best balanced with the benefits and harms of disclosure. Obviously, this legislation didn't pass, and Washington probably got the first dose of how challenging some of these things are to put into statute and to create certainty. We need to move forward, though, in reconciling these different differences, because I believe that we are only at the tip of the iceberg of the information age. And while there are a number of important issues, I believe that designing a federal privacy scheme would be helpful, which then brings us to the question of what should be in that scheme. The first and most fundamental question is whether law should incorporate the five fair information practices, notice, choice, access, security, and enforcement, that really first evolved from the work that was done at HEW that became part of the 1974 Act. So we have a lot of information, study, and implementation of that into law. We should use this as a basis for the law. Now, there are some that might say that we should not, but I believe that that is the first thing that should be implemented in this. I will comment briefly on each of these: notice, choice, access, and security. And there are certainly many nuances to these that I think merit highlighting, and I will try to just touch briefly on them because I think there are some very tricky questions here. I know you'll be delving into these at a much deeper level. As to notice, you know, as Senator Shelby, informed consent is the key, and I would expect that a very flexible framework could be established for informed consent. A federal law has to be compatible with a range of technologies that are not even in place yet. And so that will be a challenge. But the bottom line is that if the notice is clear and conspicuous and easy to understand, we will be best serving the public's interest. Regarding choice, if we make a distinction between certain levels of information, those being the most sensitive, financial, and others, and put them in a different category, as Senator Shelby was articulating, then if we give clear and conspicuous notice, then the opt-out solution may be reasonable for some certain types of information. On the issue of access and a consumer's ability to correct inaccurate information is a very complex matter. There must be a mechanism for consumers to access personally identifiable information and make corrections, but the process must be a reasonable one. It is in business best interest to want to have the most reasonable and accurate information possible, but you can imagine in drafting the requirements for this that this could be a big challenge. As to security, protecting the consumers once information has been given, companies should be required to take reasonable steps to protect the data that they collect. A law should be intended particularly to address the potential bad actors, but there needs to be a baseline that assures that consumers, that their information is being handled in a responsible manner. And the final element of the Fair Information Practices Enforcement is somewhat interconnected with preemption. Should there only be a federal agency enforcement? I'm sure that you're all waiting for the debate on that. And I guess what I would like to say is that I think that this is one of the toughest policy questions that deserves, there are lots of related questions: state enforcement of the federal law, private right of action. If there's only federal enforcement, will there be adequate resources to fulfill the promise of law? Will state attorney generals have adequate resources? The goal of legislation is obviously to protect individuals from not only major industry players who fail to adequately protect privacy, because sometimes these people actually do a better job than others, but from the numerous infractions by a variety of bad actors. So I think when we look at this, we need to look for alternative models than simply looking at the triad of standing, possibly a hybrid of some of the three most often discussed options. And I'm throwing out a concept here, if you will. But one example is similar to what is done with the EEOC. When a consumer is provided with an opportunity for recourse only after he gives the government agency the opportunity to pursue an action, something akin to a process of employment discrimination. Now, there are other things, other ways to look at providing the predictability in the system and making sure that the enforcement is there. But I look at this almost as if the Miranda rights are a case study. Everybody knows what the Miranda rights are. They know what their rights are. They know when they're violated. And we need to get to that same level of certainty for consumer protection, because we are just at the tip of this iceberg of an age that is the information age, where so much information will be provided digitally. So I think you have, and we all have, a lot of work ahead of us. Historically, states had the primary responsibility for protecting consumers, and indeed states have led in consumer protection. So this obviously is a very difficult question, and we're going to have to work together. We need to work to craft a federal law that will protect consumers and bring consumers the promise of the Internet. And as you are discussing today and tomorrow these complex issues, I hope that you will give a lot of thought to the fact that gathering the personal data online is meeting or will be meeting standards as high as data collection in the other world. And how do we marry that as a national policy together? We need to bring members of Congress, state and consumer representatives, online business communities, and companies developing new technologies together to craft the proper federal framework. The ultimate law, as I said, should provide flexibility for both consumers and businesses and protect consumers in a transparent environment that they know that those rights are there and exist to protect them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator, for very thoughtful remarks. In California, what would be the First Amendment, the commonly religious freedom and speech and press and so on, includes the right of privacy. So, of course, we also have in the same place the right to fish. It's a kind of a lengthy right, but anyhow, it's certainly easy to find some foundation for these issues because of our law in that respect, and I recommend it to you. So far, its only application has been in the area of reproductive rights, but I've been grateful for that. But I think I can see it evolving into perhaps some of these other questions. Senator, thank you very much for joining us. I think, where's the boss? Are we due back in the... Well, we have a few minutes to have those that haven't met, perhaps Senator Cantrell, to have a chance just to quickly say hello and thank each of you for participation.